Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers. And Brian, how's that Jeep going? How's that working out?
We're going to be okay.
Okay.
I don't know when, but we're going to be okay. No, it turns
this
out
this has been a saga.
Yeah.
Because we talked about this last week.
We did. Better talking about it on the radio than us, you know, being stuck in Cedar Rapids.
Well,
we
that's
don't
true.
Do that again.
Yeah.
No, it turns out that I lost the transmission.
Okay.
So it's getting rebuilt. And I'm hoping that that's the end of the saga. And so hopefully we'll get that bad boy back on the road here in a few days. But did I hear your car's down too?
Yep. I dropped my wife off to work.
We need a show that's like Caffeinated Hacks or something, you know, where we have people call in and talk about, you know, what we need to do to keep our fleet of hacks running.
My repair is a little bit cheaper than yours. It was basically wheel bearing and a tie rod that
needed to be fixed. Yes, so. That's minor stuff.
But not transmission. If my transmission, my car goes off, I'm just letting it get towed away.
That's it.
Yeah,
let it tow off into the sunset.
Right. It's not worth putting the money into getting that fixed. Still, just buy another car.
Listen, if you want to find out all kinds of troubling things about cars, give Shane and I a call.
Yes. Oh,
what do we got going today?
Well, hey, we got a special guest on the line. Mark Tooley, he's the president of the Institute on Religion and Democracy. He wrote a piece at CAF. Well, first of all, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, Mark.
Hey, great to be with you.
He's still here.
Yeah. After all that discussion about cars. So, hey, welcome. And you wrote a piece on Christian Post saying, the headline reads, I don't know if you're responsible for the headline, but worse than Hillary, why I will never vote for Donald Trump. So you're one of those never Trump people.
Well, yes, I guess I am. I recounted that I've voted Republican every election, every year since I turned 18 years old in 1983 as a high school senior in Northern Virginia. And so this year potentially would be the first time ever that I do not vote Republican. So it'll be momentous for me.
And yeah, well, I'm hoping we still have a chance to vote Republican.
We're very concerned that might not happen.
Yeah, I'm not ready to concede Trump's the nominee yet, but I'm with
you.
No,
we shouldn't.
I'm with you. I've made that decision as well, and that would be the first time for me. I've been able to find reason to hold my. I mean, there's been several candidates I've had to hold my nose for, like Romney and McCain, but I found a reason to. But with Trump, it's like not only is he bad on policy, but he's on issues of character and
morality. I think a lot of guys are going to have that same kind of experience where they've always supported the GOP candidate, and for the first time in their lives, they're not going to be able to do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So what are your reasons?
Well, one of the arguments that I make is that there's a lot of talk about America being post-Christian. I don't fully accept that. But ironically, the Republican Party would become post-Christian if we didn't pursue the Donald Trump line, which I think would be a terrible loss, not just for the Republican Party, but for the country, and that the Republican Party was founded by Protestant abolitionists before the Civil War and has always been the bearer of a certain Protestant ethos. Mm-hmm. That would be completely lost, potentially, if Donald Trump becomes the standard bearer.
But Mark, he's been confirmed a Presbyterian.
Stop. Just stop that now.
Apparently he has some memory of his mother being Presbyterian, so the memory seems it goes way back.
But he's got a picture. He showed it to us seriously, he brought his family Bible when he was campaigning in Iowa, his family Bible, and they put up on PowerPoint a picture of his confirmation class.
Yeah, they tracked that down after 40 or 50 years.
Right.
Well, and I don't think that a president or an office holder has to be Christian. He has to be qualified. He has to have good character. So I don't hold that against Trump. But Trump would be unique and unusual, disturbingly so, because he would be our first president who rhetorically and in style really rejects a Christian ethos. Every other president has at least, in his public behavior and public rhetoric, has gone along with that, the continuity of that tradition.
Yeah, one of the things that struck me early on in the campaign was, again, he was in Iowa and he was being interviewed by Frank Luntz at the Family Leadership Summit in Ames, Iowa. And he was asked, have you ever had to ask God for forgiveness? And he said, no.
It's kind of like, what for?
What for? Yeah.
He didn't say that.
It was an honest answer.
Yeah, I appreciate the honesty. But, you know, one part of me is thinking, how the lack of humility that would take to say that I've lived a life in a way that I have not needed to ask forgiveness ever, not only from God, but I think from just anybody else. It's incredible.
Well, certainly we've had arrogant presidents before, but Trump is the first one who would be openly and proudly arrogant. So
right.
That would be another historic first.
Right. It seems like, yeah, we're going to... If he wins the nomination and then wins the presidency, we're going to go from one narcissist to another.
Maybe to a new height, even.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this is narcissism on steroids.
At least President Obama doesn't refer to himself in the third person. So, which is usually a bad sign.
Me, Donald Trump, I build stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to build a wall. I'm the best.
So... You know, right now, you know, Super Tuesday 2 or 3 or whatever number you signed last Tuesday, Trump has, I don't have a delegate count in front of me, but he's almost to 700. He's almost a little more than halfway to where he needs. Cruz has right around, depending which count you look at, right around 400 delegates. Is there any, do you think there's any catching Trump? Think he could be stopped?
Well, I'm not a Republican Party insider, but I hope and think there is still time. About 37% of Republican voters so far have voted for Trump, which means 63%, almost two-thirds, have voted against him. So there seemingly is a significant majority against Trump, and hopefully that majority can still prevail.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of the things that seems like has favored Trump in the past is open primaries where Democrats and independents can actually go and vote for the Republican nominee, which just I hope, and I don't know if it's going to take state law changes to address that, but that's something I just don't understand, why independents and other, you know, people of other party go in and weigh on another party's, you know, nominee. It's crazy. But you look at closed primaries, with the exception of Florida, a big exception. Trump, basically, it's his kryptonite, it seems. He just doesn't do as well in closed primaries. And it looks like in the calendar going forward, we have more closed primaries than we have open. So hopefully... It's going to be, I'm thinking at this point, we're probably looking more at a contested convention than we are somebody overtaking Trump and reaching 1237 before he does. But I don't think people who are claiming that he's a shoo-in at this point, I'm not sure they quite understand the delegate math and the anti-Trump sentiment that's out there. What do you think?
Well, I definitely agree with you that they underestimate the strong anti-Trump sentiment that's out there, that you and I both exemplified, it sounds like, but I know many, many conservatives, diehard conservative Republicans, who at this point say they just could not vote for Trump. So if you recall, Joe Romney, whatever his weaknesses, got, I believe, 93% of all Republicans. It's hard to go much higher than that.
Right.
Certainly Trump will not be anywhere close to that.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, tell us your thoughts on why there's such a strong evangelical presence in the Trump support at present.
Well, I have mixed views on that. There's been lots and lots of talk about it, and maybe evangelical support for Trump has been a little bit exaggerated. It's not been a majority of evangelicals. It's been
right.
A plurality, but it seems like evangelicals are just sort of echoing or following other Republican voters. There doesn't seem to be much distinction between them. It is interesting that if you look closely at some poll results, church-going evangelicals tend to be much more anti-Trump than more nominal evangelicals.
Right, right.
But evangelical elites have been almost uniform. Those who have spoken have been almost uniformly negative and hostile towards Trump.
Right. And you know, you brought up a good point, too, because looking at exit polling, for instance, it seems like in the South, in North Carolina, you had only 2% of evangelicals vote in favor of Cruz over Trump. But in Missouri, it was more like 16%. There was a greater than Florida. You had a majority, or not quite a majority, a plurality of evangelicals, and Trump won the evangelical vote in Florida. There is definitely a distinction, I think, between even how evangelicals, or people who are in exit polling anyway, self-describe themselves as evangelical in the South compared to other locations in the United States. And I wonder if a lot of that just has to do with cultural distinctions. Saying I'm not an evangelical be akin to saying I'm not an American, basically. What do you think?
Well, I think you're right, and partly it's a reflection of the collapse of the old liberal Protestant mainline. So it used to be evangelical meant you were a zealous, theologically conservative, Bible-believing, born-again Christian, but with the collapse of the mainline, evangelical has essentially replaced Protestant as a religious description. So now you have this category of nominal evangelical, which seems like a contradiction.
It does. I mean, it's a tragedy that word has been redefined or co-opted.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Mark Tooley with the Institute on Religion and Democracy. This is Shane Vanderhart with Brian Myers. So, going forward, how you would encourage evangelicals to, you know, proceed going forward? As you know, there's still a lot of elections to, you know, primaries to take place yet.
I want to say that I don't think that someone is necessarily a bad Christian based on how they vote. It's possible to be a very devout Christian who is going to occupy the very high portals in heaven and still be very politically foolish or uninformed. Mm-hmm. So we ought to be cautious in how we
critique
Christians who we think are not behaving very well politically. But going forward, I hope that evangelicals who are tempted by the Trump phenomenon will think it through more clearly and understand how much is at stake, and that his particular form of I'll call it middle finger politics, stick it to them without any kind of seriousness behind it.
Right.
It should not appeal to a serious Christian who really has a strong commitment to American democracy, I don't think.
Mark, you had mentioned, I believe, that in the Christian Post article that not only is Trump bad, but he's actually worse than Hillary. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, a lot of people take umbrage at that kind of affirmation, and
yeah.
I certainly, obviously, am not a Hillary Clinton supporter, and I could not support someone who supports unrestricted abortion on demand and
right.
shares the view of the Obama administration.
Right, so...
Did we lose him? We lost him altogether.
Yeah. I think that's the first that's ever happened. So, unfortunately,
wow.
we lost Mark Tooley. So,
sorry about that, folks.
Yeah, that's the first. Anyway, just we'll keep going here, talking about, you know, we've got several races. We got Arizona coming up. We have Utah coming up, and Arizona right now, I think, is going to probably go towards Trump mainly. Because of early voting. Right now, it looks like he's got the early voting advantage in about 55%, I've heard.
But don't you think also that in the Southwest, where illegal immigration is such a huge issue, that you're going to see some very energized voters
Definitely.
Pursuing Trump?
Definitely.
I mean, on a single-issue basis.
I know the Cruz messaging has been focused on, in Arizona, has been focused on immigration. But I think they've pretty much conceded Arizona's going to go toward, and it's winner take all, toward Trump. However, Utah looks very promising for Cruz. Then moving forward, you know, I think you get in the states, people are thinking like, well, New York, and they just assume Trump is going to win New York. Here's something that you have to realize about New York. New York is not a winner-take-all state. There's a winner-take-all trigger, but it varies by, okay, for instance, you have a winner-take-all trigger. So if Canada reaches 50% statewide, they get 14 delegates, but there's 92 delegates, I believe, given out by New York, a portion by New York. New York then goes by congressional district, and there's 27 congressional districts in New York, and those are either there's a winner-take-all trigger or they're proportional. So
Trump, now, where's the trigger at?
Trigger 50%.
50, okay.
50%. If, you know, I'm just saying Trump could end up winning New York, but he's not going to take all the delegates from New York. It's just not going to happen. California, same deal. It's winner-take-all, but it's winner-take-all by congressional district. And a lot of people don't realize that California is actually, in the Republican primaries, pretty conservative. Fairly conservative. So I have a hard time seeing Trump, carrying California.
Well, here's a little bit of a wild card, and I haven't seen any of the data in quite a while.
Yeah.
But at one point, almost a third of Trump's support was not Republican. It was indeed Democratic and independent.
Yes.
That's a wild card.
That is. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Radio Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, on the line, we have a very special guest, Steve Myers of Cyhawk Thoughts. I think this is the third time we've had him on Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Anytime we have a big sports happening, especially with March Madness going on, we thought it would be good to talk with Steve. Steve, along with Chuck Utek, started Cyhawk Thoughts in 2011 to be a one-stop source for both Iowa State and Iowa Athletics. And both teams, as well as Northern Iowa, are in the big dance. And, of course, Iowa State won their first-round game on Thursday, beating the Iona Gaels. What is a Gael?
That's more or less a Celtic, somebody that speaks Gaelic.
Okay,
I think that's the connection.
That sounds imposing.
Anyway, Steve, welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me as always.
Okay, buddy. The Clones had a strong first half on Thursday. It was good to see them get out of the gate quickly. And do you think they'll be able to continue to do that in this tourney? Next up, we got Arkansas Little Rock. What do you think?
Well, I think Arkansas Little Rock is going to impose a much better defense than Iona. Iona was basically Iowa State, but a mid-major version. All offense, no defense. Arkansas Little Rock, they're going to be a little bit more physical. They're going to be stronger in the middle, and you know, it's not going to be a 94-81 game next time around.
Right.
We're gonna have to really buckle down and make sure we're getting our shots and we're getting open looks, because if we're missing shots, we could be in some trouble with these guys.
Were you surprised to see these guys beat Purdue with their 2-7 footers?
Yeah, not really, because I had a lot of people say, you know, how's Iowa State going to, you know, contain Haas and Hammonds in the second round? You know, and of course, everyone was assuming that Purdue and Iowa State would meet up. And I said, well, you know, they got to get past Little Rock first. And they kind of looked at me strange. And I said, well, you know, this Little Rock team, they're not small. I mean, their front line 6'11", 6'10", 6'9", 6'9", 6'8". That's more size than Iowa State has.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there wasn't a big matchup difference between Arkansas, Little Rock, and Purdue. And, you know, so I wasn't really surprised. I thought they would give them a great game. I had no idea that, you know, they had some guard that was going to go off on them and hit that unbelievable three to send it in overtime, and they just wanted it more in overtime.
So how well do they match up with Iowa State? I mean, are we going to see a game that's going to be, you know, in the 50s or 60s? Or, I mean, how much – they're going to take the air out of the ball, I would think, given what we saw with Iowa State and Iona.
Yeah, I think they're going to try to. I mean, if I had to make a guess, 74-66, you know, I guess is my initial prediction on the game Saturday.
Okay.
Of course, our listeners know we generally record on Friday morning, so Iowa's playing later today against I'm not going to have you do any predictions, because you can everybody will know by Saturday when they hear this how Iowa does, but
actually, I was going to have him make a prediction. I was going to have him go out on a limb and make
a
prediction.
Go out on a limb.
All right, Iowa over Temple and 80-69.
Okay. All right,
11 points. Okay.
Yeah, I thought Iowa. I gave them a first round. I thought they would win first round. I have a feeling.
Well, it looked like a big, you know, a good matchup to me. I don't know that I would have taken 11 points there, Steve.
I don't think they face someone like Utah, and I think Utah's going to have a big game. And if they start to really concentrate on him, you know, maybe that'll open up Peter Jock. I just think Iowa has a little bit too much firepower for Temple to contain.
Yeah.
Speaking of Utah, I was going to ask you this: just how good is this kid?
Well, I think he's really good. If you talk about the two best players in the state of Iowa, you always go to Niang and Utah. And to pick which one's better, I mean, you have to really take a deep dive into individual stats and all this stuff. Utah is a much better outside shooter than
right.
Niang, in my opinion.
Right.
I think Niang's maybe a better shot in transition from deep, but Utah, if he has a look at the basket and he's a set shooter, you give that edge to him. Footwork down low, you have to give that one to Niang.
No question.
Defense, though, it's completely Utah. So
okay.
He has the ability to – he's so long, he's going to make an impact at the next level wherever he goes.
Well, on occasion, he can get his own shot, too. We saw him do that against Iowa State.
Yeah, he's got that nice little fadeaway, you know, if he's on the block. And then the other thing that makes him so special is he could just be holding the ball 3 foot, 4 foot behind the three-point line, and he'll have a guy right on him, and he's just so tall, and he's got such a long length that he just shoots right over him, and it's a quick release, too.
Let's go back to the Iowa State Cyclones just for a moment. Were you surprised that they got that number 4 seed in the tournament?
I thought they'd end up at a 5. I know a lot of people thought they'd be at a 6. But I think the committee, we lucked out with the committee this year. One year they're going to look at RPI, and that's going to be the major factor. The next year it's going to be your strength of schedule, and then the next year it's going to be, you know, this. And it happens to be this year it was based on top 50 wins and top 50 or top 100 losses. And if there was any year for Iowa State to benefit from that, it was this year.
Right.
If you looked at our losses, we didn't lose to anyone outside of the tournament.
Hmm.
And yet we beat a number 1 seed, we beat a number 2 seed, you know, we beat a number 6 seed, and so on and so forth. So our top 50 RPI wins were really, really good, and we didn't have any losses outside of the top 100. So we kind of lucked out, and I think the committee gave us did us some favors by looking so strongly just at wins and losses this year.
Now we can't neglect the Northern Iowa Panthers. What do you, Brian?
We were going to get there. But go ahead.
Yeah, Northern Iowa.
No. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this matchup. It's going to be fun. Wes Washburn versus Isaiah Taylor. That's going to be a dandy of a matchup between those two point guards. The size that Texas has down low scares me a little bit for UNI, but the thing about UNI is they're kind of like Wichita State in a sense, in terms of they're just a really stingy defense. They're not going to overwhelm you with athleticism, but they just play so sound on that defensive end, and it makes it tough to score. I'm probably going to go with Texas to win this one, but it's not going to be easy, and I'm really looking forward to Washburn versus Isaiah Taylor.
But here's the thing about UNI. They've been really up and down. In some respects, all three of the Iowa teams have been up-and-down teams this year. But UNI has shown on any given day they can beat anybody. And now they're in the tournament. They've won a conference tournament championship. All three of their conference tourney wins were close, including an overtime win over a very tough Wichita State team. And they have to be really confident right now.
No, they do. And what they've done this year is definitely head scratching. I say probably more head scratching than any of the other two schools in the state. You beat North Carolina, you beat Iowa State, you beat Wichita State twice, but then you lose to teams like Loyola of Chicago. It makes absolutely
no sense. Yeah,
no sense whatsoever. And that's the one difference. You know, Iowa State didn't have those. There wasn't that head scratcher of a loss. You know, we maybe thought that you and I was a head scratcher at that time. It turned out not to be.
Right.
Neutral court and a loss by 2 points. But, yeah, we didn't, you know, Iowa State didn't have that. And Iowa didn't until basically the Penn State game, where you're just like, what is going on? But, you know, it's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde for Northern Iowa at this point.
Well, you mentioned Washburn earlier. He's turned into something of a monster player. He had 28 points and 11 assists against Iowa State. He had 21 points and 8 assists against North Carolina. And he had 20 points in that tourney game against Wichita State. And he's a great story, too, because he grew up in Iowa and then he transferred to UNI to stay close to home.
Yeah, he's the real deal. You know, last year, you didn't know how he was going to end up turning out. He got some minutes off the bench. He was always that spark. Coming into this season, being the starting point guard, you know, would he be able to you know, not just spark the team, but now you're out there for a full game. How are you going to run the show? And he's just done a superb job. He's the most athletic player on their team. That is vertical, like the number one vertical in the Missouri Valley Conference.
He's a leaper.
He's so quick off his feet, and he has that fadeaway that is just killer as well. Of course, Evansville knows all too well about that fadeaway. That's what sealed the deal for him in the Missouri Valley Championship game.
You're listening to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and on the line we have Steve Myers with Cy-Hawk Thoughts. Steve, who's your what's your final four pick?
I have Villanova coming out of the South. I also have Oklahoma making it to the final four. Let's see here. I think West Virginia and Virginia. So a couple of Virginia schools, Oklahoma and Villanova.
No Michigan State, no Kansas.
Nope. I thought Kansas is finally going to get knocked out. I think I had them knocked out in the Sweet 16 against Maryland. I think Maryland's going to shock some people, but then end up getting nipped by Villanova. And got, you know, two Big 12 schools still in there. West Virginia's press, I think, is just going to give a lot of people problems, and Buddy Hield's going to carry them. But in the championship game, I have Nova and Virginia, and Virginia with the win over Nova.
Yeah, West Virginia's press is just a nightmare for any team.
It is. You have to have three guards that can play almost 40 minutes to contain that thing.
So let's talk real quickly about Iowa again. What do you think? You mentioned earlier how they had a couple of games where you just absolutely had no idea what happened to them. So speculate a little bit on what happened to them late in the season. Was it just a matter of them peaking a little too early?
Well, I don't know that they peaked too early. I think that they kind of caught everyone off guard. And at that point in time, you didn't really know how to handle them. And obviously, Michigan State didn't have a clue how to handle the Hawkeyes. As more film came in and the Big Ten games, you know, started rolling in, coaches made adjustments. They made adjustments on Utah. And then when they did that, Jock went off on them. And so then they figured out you need to make adjustments for both of those guys. And, you know, this is no knock against Fran at all. I don't mind Fran McCaffrey. I felt like he didn't make the necessary adjustments afterwards. You know, he's the one that it's a chess game. If someone's going to adjust to your offense, what's your next move?
Right.
And I didn't see a lot of that. And I think Maryland was the first one to really kind of exploit it. You know, Iowa fans say, well, we had a really off shooting night. And to their credit, they did. But did Maryland have something to do with that?
Sure.
And I think other teams started following suit, and they started looking at how to defend Iowa. And I just don't think the necessary offensive adjustments came from Fran to carry that momentum that they had.
Should Iowa have gotten a higher seed than a 7?
Yeah, I think they probably should have gotten probably a 6. But, you know, it's really hard for the committee. You know, from what I said before, they were looking at wins and losses and the strengths of those wins and losses. Dropping that game to Penn State and then dropping to Illinois in the first round of the tournament, I think that kind of sealed the deal for a 7.
Okay, for the three Iowa teams, how deep do you have them going in your bracket, Steve?
Well, I have Iowa State beating Purdue next round. Obviously, they're going to have to do it to Arkansas Little Rock, but I have them bowing out in the Sweet 16 against a tough Virginia team that I have winning it all. I have you and I sneaking past Texas in one of my brackets, but the one that counts, I have Texas ending up getting them. And then Iowa, I have them losing to Villanova, but that's one matchup where I could definitely see Iowa actually getting to a Sweet 16 because I think they'd match up well with Villanova.
Do you think that the Cyclones are going to be tightening up their defense going forward, or is it going to be one of those deals where they just are going to have to outscore everybody?
Well, that's a good question. It's going to depend on the matchup. I know if you looked at yesterday's game, it was an up and down contest. But we were playing a team that averaged 80 points a game. We knew they were going to score. We knew we were going to have to outscore them. And I think that's the mindset we went in there with, was let's outscore them. We're not going to beat them in a 64-65 game. We're going to have to outscore them. I think as the games go on, if we do hit Virginia, that's one of those ones where we're going to have to play just as much defense as Virginia because they're right. Going to limit the possessions down to like 50.
Yep, we're out of time. Thanks a lot, Steve. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you, Steve.
Yep, thank you, guys.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give him a call at 515-292-7141 or go to crosswalkcounseling.org.
Okay, it's time for our news rundown, otherwise known as News You Can Use. A contested convention is looking more likely, says Speaker Ryan. According to the Hill.com, Speaker Paul Ryan said Thursday there's no chance he'll emerge as the GOP presidential nominee if no candidate captures enough delegates before this summer's convention. For the first time, however, Ryan acknowledged the increasing likelihood that the GOP will be decided in Cleveland at what's known as a contested or open convention. Donald Trump is the clear front runner, but whether he can clinch the nomination by winning 1,237 delegates before the party's July convention remains to be seen. Nothing has changed other than the perception that this is more likely to be an open convention than we thought before. Ryan, the ceremonial chairman of the convention, told reporters, "We're getting our minds around the idea that this could very well become a reality and that those of us who are involved in the convention need to respect that." What do you think about that, Shane?
Well, that's the process. That's the nomination process. And I know Trump was saying that if he loses the nomination, there's going to be riots.
And 1968 all over again.
Maybe riots if he wins it.
Well, I know. And first of all, he's acting as though he's the presumptive nominee, and he is still only halfway to getting the delegates he needs. Folks, 1,237 is not just some random number picked out by the GOP as the threshold. What that represents is 50% of the delegates plus one. Means he has a majority of delegates. We want our candidate to be able to have a majority of delegates because then we know they're truly representing the will of the Republican Party.
Yeah, but this is the Donald.
Yeah, well, you know, people... and
if do rules apply to him?
Right. These are rules that all candidates who run agree to. Now, there's been a lot of talk of potentially a brokered convention. An open and contested convention is not a brokered convention.
Right.
All right? I'm glad Paul Ryan said, he has said on a couple different occasions, I am not going to be running, you know, whoever our nominee is should be a person who was actually running for president. Here's the thing. I'm not sure we can have a brokered convention. I know for certain we can't have one unless the rules are changed, because Rule 40 says that to be placed in nomination, you need to have at least the majority of delegates in eight states. So that would preclude any current non-presidential candidate from actually getting the nomination, because how the balloting works, there are 100 or so unbound delegates, which theoretically, if somebody went to, you know, well, I don't think they can actually, they still couldn't, because Rule 40, there aren't, those unbound delegates don't represent eight states, so they still couldn't get placed in the nomination. They would have to actually change Rule 40 and convince these unbound delegates to vote for them in order to even be in the first round. Because if you're not in the first round, you're done. You can't go forward. Mm-hmm. And you've got to actually be, then you'd have to have more than, say, Ben Carson, who has eight delegates, in order to make it the second ballot. Because with each ballot, somebody gets dropped off. Okay? So a broker convention would be, you know, kind of changing the rules midstream, the party leadership injecting who they think should be the nominee.
That kind of thing hasn't happened in decades. Right. That's not going to happen.
So this is a process to make sure we've got a nominee who represents, you know, a majority of delegates, or has a majority of delegates. And I want to remind, you know, our listeners, we do not live in a democracy. We live in a representative republic. All right. So when you vote for president, you're voting for the candidate, but ultimately it's the delegates who make that decision.
That's exactly right.
So we have to keep that in mind, as we don't live in a direct democracy like that.
Good point, because nobody talks about that anymore.
Right.
Well, we got a couple of really nice, fun, happy news items on the rundown today. First is Iowa Senate votes to lift the gun suppressor ban. This is according to Caffeinated Dots. We know those guys.
Yeah, I wonder who they are.
House File 2279 passed the Iowa Senate on Thursday morning by a 46-4 vote. Look at that. That's a smackdown.
Yeah, Democrats up for re-election knew they needed a good gun vote.
The bill called the Hearing Protection Act, I like that, will, if signed by Governor Branstad, lift the ban on gun suppressors in Iowa. Currently, suppressors are on Iowa's list of offensive weapons.
It's not, suppressors aren't even a weapon.
All right.
And on, if you go to caffeinatedthoughts.com, you go to that story. I actually have a video up there where you can listen to what an AR-15 sounds like with and without a suppressor. It's not a silencer, folks.
Okay, and another happy development here. Planned Parenthood secretly moves out of Iowa headquarters. And this is from Caffeinated Thoughts as well. Late last week, Iowa Right to Life confirmed that Planned Parenthood of the Heartland has quietly deserted their million-dollar administration building. Feature that. That's really a tragedy. Formerly housed in a sprawling building in the heart of downtown Des Moines, they've recently posted a for sale sign in the front yard.
I'm trying to think where they were actually located. I'm not sure I know.
We are extremely encouraged to see yet another massive downsizing by the once seemingly formidable abortion giant. However, we are most concerned with their new office setting, stated Jennifer Bowen, executive director of Iowa Right to Life. They've moved into a much smaller suite a few blocks down at 818 Fifth Street, home of the Young Women's Resource Center. Anyway, this is still happy news that they had to shut that place down.
Yeah. They're obviously bleeding money because of the webcam abortion original ban. Now that's obviously been struck down. The ban was struck down by the Iowa Supreme Court.
And regardless of what happened down in Texas, those videos had an impact on people.
Absolutely.
I'm confident it did.
Absolutely. But, I think in Iowa, certainly the webcam issue, they haven't been able to recover from that original ban. And they've been closing clinics, I think, I want to say 14.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of them. The war... The war is winnable.
Oh, yeah, there, okay? And let me give the most credit to, we have this movement called 40 Days of Prayer and 40 Days of Life.
Good point.
And let's give credit where credit's due. God is the one who's working this out because his people are praying that he will move. Because he's done miracles in this regard. I mean, it's anytime we see an abortion clinic close, that's huge.
That's why we always celebrate it here. Absolutely. On Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Okay. And last, we seem to have, I guess this is a almost regular feature. So here we go. Hillary.
You've got mail.
Okay, according to the Daily Caller, Democratic presidential candidate and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is facing an uprising in the, that's what it's called here, uprising, in the national security establishment, prompted by longstanding anger about her cavalier handling of classified materials and government secrets. As Clinton's case progresses, it appears that the probe is being directed by intelligence and national security law enforcement authorities rather than civilian agencies subject to political influence, according to the Daily Caller. There are currently at least four national security investigations, including those by the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the Inspectors General for the Department of State and the intelligence community. You know, we've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
This has been such a clear violation of federal law. There's got to be some guys in that area that are just apoplectic about it.
Hillary for prison, 2016. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. We'll be back.
Rules, rules, rules. Why does God have so many of them? He's just too restrictive, and you feel he's limiting your freedom to grow. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. while back, we adopted four cute, cuddly chicks just a few days out of their shells. I was impressed with how quickly they learned and grew, all without the benefit of chicken examples. In some respects, these resourceful chirpers didn't seem to need us at all. However, that fateful day when they chose to escape our attempts to protect them, they met their premature place on the food chain. We were heartbroken and frustrated, yet also reminded that we too face one who seeks to devour us, that roaring lion, Satan. Remember, the loving confines of God's Word are for your protection, not your restriction. To find that safe place with God, call Crosswalk Ministries at 515-635-5465 or online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Hey, you realize we just don't do radio program. We blog, too. So, go to caffeinatedthoughts.com, read all the updates, subscribe to our emails. There's a form right on the front page. You can sign up. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Stay in touch, because we put up stuff daily almost. So, usually, except on Sundays, unless there's something big that happens on Sundays. Usually, you take Sundays off, but typically, we have daily updates.
And actually, there's actually been more than one author recently.
Yes. Yes. It's amazing. Yeah. And by the way, you know, I just want to throw this out there. Any listeners that like to write, and you like to write about politics or culture, you know, shoot me an email, shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com. I can't, you know, obviously everybody who writes does so on a volunteer basis, including me. But, you know, it's a good way to express yourself and have a platform and get read.
Are you saying there's no salary involved? Is
there's
that what I'm
no
hearing
salary,
you say?
But I'll double yours. Yep. Double what?
Thanks
double,
a lot, pal.
You're welcome. I'll double what I pay you. So.
And now we've come to my favorite part of the show. We're about to share a story that is truly unbelievable, yet you know it must be true because
you can't make this stuff up.
Okay, this is from The Telegraph. A Romanian member of parliament has been sentenced to 2 years in prison for handing out vast quantities of fast food to voters in a bid to win an election.
Hmm.
Florin Popescu, a liberal Democrat politician, resigned his parliamentary seat this month ahead of sentencing as he came to answer for a crime committed in 2012. Mr. Popescu was not a member of parliament then, but was seeking re-election to a local council. Despite it not being a seat in the national parliament, he saw fit to give away 60,992 kilograms of grilled chicken, ordering it in bulk from a local business and sending campaign volunteers to collect and distribute the meat.
Great.
I guess you can buy votes over there pretty cheaply.
Yeah.
He gave me chicken.
The prosecutor told the court every package of chicken was distributed for election purposes. In addition to benefiting himself, the edible bribe was part of a campaign to control the mayoralty of Dambavita County. Now, I have no idea what that means. But anyway, the mayoralty, or mayoralty, whatever. Since the bribe, Mr. Popescu went on to win a seat in the national parliament. Hey, that chicken must have been good.
It must have been very good chicken.
Yeah.
And he has, here it comes, folks, wait for it, and he has earned the nickname Chicken Baron.
Now, okay. Two years for giving out chicken. Well, I'm curious. Well, at least it was grilled chicken, so it was healthy.
Yeah.
He could have, you know, fried chicken. So KFC, it wasn't KFC. I wonder who he gave out. It must have been a Romanian chain.
It must have been.
Hmm.
Romanian fast food.
Oh, that sounds...
Is that an oxymoron?
Delicious.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe the guy was kind of, maybe he was a greenie. Maybe he's an environmentalist. Maybe he was, who knows what he mm-hmm. was. He obviously wasn't a member of PETA.
No.
But he did use grilled chicken rather than fried chicken.
Yeah.
So that tells me right there that you know, he's not a man's man.
So you have to
He cares about people's health.
You have to eat fried chicken in order to be a man's
You
man?
Want that baby to be fried.
I like grilled chicken.
Me too. You're outnumbered,
hey,
bud.
Hey, you guys are both losing your man cards.
No.
Fried
no,
chicken.
No.
Original recipe, chicken. Too.
Grilled chicken on a grill.
Oh, barbecue. Send your You Can't Make This Stuff Up ideas to story@caffeinatedthoughts.com. We'll give you the credit or the blame if we use your suggestion on the show.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
Where we eat fried chicken.
Grilled chicken.
Fried.
Grilled.
See you, everybody.